You are listening to SPN, the Sports Podcasting Network.
This is Soccer Today, live on SPN Radio, your new live show about the beautiful game in all its glory, with Dwayne Rowlands and Kevin Laramie. MLS, EPL, La Liga, Champions League, all is fair game. Powered by the Sports Podcasting Network. Visit us at sportspodcastingnetwork.com.
And welcome to the day after decision day, everyone. I'm Dwayne. You know me. Kevin, he's on the line too. Charles Ball, MLS Soccer, he's going to join us today. In fact, he's on the line right now to talk about the playoffs, because everyone likes to talk about the playoffs. Charles, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me this morning, gents.
No worries. Exciting times, obviously. It's the most wonderful time of the year in Major League Soccer when we get into these intense playoff battles. And we do have a little bit of Canadian content that we're going to start with in a minute. But I do want to sort of give a little moment for our brethren on the West Coast, who unfortunately will not be in the party this year, the Vancouver Whitecaps, who were many people's picks to maybe go deep, perhaps even go as deep as you could this year at the start of the season, but it just never quite worked out, Charles. And I'm wondering what your thoughts on the Whitecaps' overall season was and what went wrong out there.
Yeah, I was one of those people that they made fools of. I had them picked for big things this season. I thought they'd contend on multiple fronts. I guess we do have to give them a small tip of the cap for advancing in CONCACAF Champions League and also pulling out a big result on the final day that has earned them the Cascadia Cup, which certainly has meaning up there in that corner of the continent. But yesterday's game was even more frustrating, I think, for a lot of us, probably more so Whitecaps fans, because you got a little glimpse of what they could have been this season. Ultimately, you know, they just couldn't produce. They couldn't score when they had to. That attack was just much too spotty and streaky. So I'm disappointed. You know, I've been a fan of what Carl Robinson has done up there. I think their long-term outlook is still pretty bright, but really shocking underachievement kind of in the meat of the season up in Vancouver.
And one thing that came out in the interview that Mark Weber did in the province out there in the newspaper came out is that perhaps they're going to revisit their designated player strategy. Do you think that is something that they need to look at to maybe bring in a bigger name, a more higher profile player that can be a more impact player?
I don't know. I don't know if I would say that. I think, you know, they've got to consider it, certainly. I think we sometimes sleep on the market size and the resources that they have up there. And, you know, fans are, I think, inevitably suspicious of a organization with that shows ambition and gets pretty decent crowds the way that Vancouver does, and sort of doesn't necessarily reflect it. It doesn't necessarily reflect the cash flow in the model they have. But I think it's a sensible model when you look at what FC Dallas has done. Right, and it's only been truly vindicated in the last few months. But they are 2/3 of the way into a treble chase right now, with a kind of a superstar free roster and a very youth-centric system, an academy that's churning out excellent talent for them. You know, that's not so different from the Whitecaps model. So I don't know if you dump the baby out with the bathwater, but you know, the biggest commodity in MLS at any given time is attacking creativity and finishing consistency. And that was the Caps' biggest problem. They're certainly not alone in that, but sometimes you can skip ahead in line by going out and splashing some money there. I think we saw Portland do that with Adi a little bit last year. Fernando Adi was a big pickup for them, and papered over a few of the other cracks in their setup. So, you know, maybe that can help, but I do think they have a model, and I hope that they'll stick with it by and large in Vancouver, because they do have good talent and a good youth system that just needs a little more time to bear fruit.
In the Eastern Conference yesterday, teams that were 4th, 5th, and 6th decided to all lose so the status quo would stay the same. Montreal 3-0 loss on the road against New England, which needed to win by about 13 goals to make it in. It didn't happen. Montreal 5th, they will play DC United on the road. What was your thought on, first of all the games yesterday, decision day? What did you think about all the games at the same time and then the Eastern Conference landscape?
Yeah, it was kind of like drinking from a fire hose, wasn't it? It was a lot going on. Certainly, it has a wow factor. There's a fun buzz that comes from it. I have to say, I think when you're talking about a number of factors, whether it's TV ratings, whether it's getting fans' attention, eyes on as many games as possible, I like the way they did it last weekend a little more, where you had all the East games at one time. I think it was 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock. Eastern time last weekend, all the East played at one time and all the West played at the other, the later slot, and kind of back to back, to where you create a similar experience, but maybe not quite so much like a kitten watching ping pong, it was a lot of fun, great. There wasn't too much that had to be decided. And in the end, the East kind of didn't really get shaken up the way it might have. Certainly the Timbers are the big losers, both on the day and the week. I see what they're doing. I appreciate it. I think it's a neat way of sort of trying to take the international model that you see, elsewhere in leagues around the world, and that FIFA does with their major tournaments on the final day of group stage play. There are competitive reasons for it, and there's kind of spectacle reasons, and they're trying to find that balance, and you have to give them credit for giving it a shot.
You mentioned Portland as the biggest losers. It got close for RSL as well. A few weeks ago, RSL were almost a locked-in team for the playoffs. And then something happened, and it could have gotten away, but they stayed in the playoff picture, sixth position, even though they lost 2-1 at Seattle. What happened in Salt Lake, Charles, in your opinion?
The goals. That was an attack that was churning out goals in all different sorts of fashions with multiple contributors at the start of the season. They have a great South American contingent. There's a lot of creativity in the attack there. But over the last, up to 6, 7, 8 games now, really since late summer, it's just dried up. And then the problem is, when something like that happens, you tend to snowball a bit, and you get into psychological issues in addition to form issues. So I think they're kind of a mess right now. Jeff Kassar, their coach, used a poker analogy. He said, "We're at the river card this past week." I don't know what else he can do at this point. They actually performed relatively well in a tough environment in Seattle yesterday, but when it came down to it, kind of took a deflected goal that had a little bit of a scrappiness to it. That was all they got, and that's something. But right now, this team doesn't look like they're gonna go very deep, because they just they don't know where the goals are gonna come from. And they're depending on some older legs, especially in terms of Morales there, who aren't fully fit and aren't necessarily dependable in terms of minutes and contributions. So it's a tough spot in Salt Lake. But as we all know, MLS playoffs are a second season, and that's what Kassar emphasized yesterday.
I think I've waited long enough now, Charles, that no one will accuse me of being Toronto-centric if I ask you about TFC, which is a fascinating team, I think, based on the form they have when Josie and Javinko are in the lineup together. If you look at their record, it's quite remarkable. When those two are both in the lineup, they are one of the best points per game pace in the league in that case. Is it really that simple for TFC if they are to go on a run in these playoffs, that they just need to keep those two healthy and scoring?
I don't know. That's obviously a huge element of it. And when you have that kind of talent up front, you're always in a match. I don't know if they've ever really gotten blown out with those two guys on the field. The problem, I think we're seeing some creaks and fissures in the defense, though. That was a really, really solid back four for large chunks of the season. And now it's not so certain, is it? I don't know if Vanny exactly knows what his best formation is. I don't know if he knows what his best defensive unit is. Drew Moore has been great there, but and I think I really like what Eric Zavaleta has done. He's come a long way, kind of had his arrival season as a pro, finally getting minutes, in one place and really becoming a true defender. But is he dependable enough in a postseason environment that he doesn't really have much experience in? I don't know, and I don't know even what we'll see from them in terms of tactics and formation when the playoffs start.
Their opponent, of course, is the Philadelphia Union. This is the Philly Union's current form. Loss, 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 draw, loss, draw. It goes on from there. This is a team not going in the right direction. No one doubts that. But it's a fascinating matchup in that regard, in the sense that everyone just assumes Toronto FC is going to eventually turn into Toronto FC. And so what are your thoughts? Does Philly have a chance in that game on the road?
Yeah, I think Philly does have a chance. The system and the format and the scheduling inject some uncertainty into things here inevitably. You know, everyone's got a short turnaround. You know, the vagaries of a home playoff game. I believe this is the first in club history, right, for Toronto. You know, so it's a little bit of a new environment for them. I think they have enough veteran talent and enough confidence in who they are and what they can be to get through this one. But I do think I think Philly's going to put a scare in them. I think it's going to be closer than people think.
Montreal DC United this Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Charles, last two games against each other, those two teams, it's 1-1. Montreal hasn't lost against DC United since August 8, 2015. How important is that home field advantage due to just being RFK and not necessarily the best soccer-specific type of stadium? What do you think about this matchup?
Well, I can tell you as a DC resident that there are some real postseason ghosts at RFK. That place does have a certain vibe about it. There's history, there's memory, and you know, even if they don't get a huge crowd on Thursday night, I think they'll it shakes, you know, and there's something about RFK it's been as many playoff games there as anywhere in this league, and I think United, you know, they kind of punted with a second choice 11 in Orlando yesterday and got away with it because Montreal did even worse in New England. So you know, I thought it was really interesting that both sides kind of failed to seize that opportunity, because I think the home field advantage is probably going to be the decisive factor here. I DC's first choice group has really been the hottest team in the league over the last month or two. I don't think you can trust that impact defense to shut them down. Certainly Piatti's going to make noise. We'll see what happens with the Drogba soap opera. Yeah. But I think I would have probably favored the home team in either case here. And so given that, I think United's going to pull this one out.
You mentioned the soap opera. We haven't talked since that happened last weekend. What's your thought on the whole, from an American perspective, an outside perspective, what's your thought on Didier Drogba with the Montreal Impact over the last 7 to 8 days?
Yeah, there's been so many takes, haven't there? I've read a range of opinions and reports on it. I still remain surprised and really disappointed in Drogba. Regardless of your ego, of your kind of sense of self and where you fit into that team, which obviously has made allowances for him, and I kind of understand why they did what they did earlier this season. I'm just surprised that the professionalism went missing for him. Because, you know, one of the biggest things you hear MLS people talk about is that players like him, the designated players, the veterans from overseas, they're not just bringing talent to this league. They're bringing they're teaching young guys, Americans and Canadians, how to be professionals. And, you know, the day-to-day environment that you encounter in Europe is so much more intense. There's so much that we have to learn from guys with his perspective. So I was really, that was what was really his shock to me. Certainly I have to, you know, make note of the local media up there that are kind of speculating that he's probably played his last game for Montreal. That's a surprise and a disappointment to me, but I think inevitably, you know, I don't blame Saputo or anybody else for making allowances, because that's the reality of the sport. Those who have more talent are treated differently, and that's the way it is in probably every sport to some extent. So I understand. I thought they managed him pretty well up to this point, but at this point, there's nothing you can't legislate for childishness and pettiness.
Charles, there's been a lot of talk of treble talk this year with Dallas, obviously, and we'll get to them in a minute. But I want to talk about a double possibility that does exist that I haven't heard many people talk about, and that is the New York Red Bulls could pull off the USL MLS double if they were to go on an MLS Cup run, having their second team win the USL Cup yesterday. What are your thoughts on the Red Bulls as they take that number one seed and rest while they watch the other four bottom teams battle out to find their opponent in the first round, second round?
Yeah, I had a colleague of mine, a veteran soccer journo, ping me last night and say, you know, Red Bulls are going to dominate the East for a long, long time. And I think there's ample reason to believe that. This is, again, we talked about FC Dallas, we talked about Vancouver. You know, I hear MLS teams get clubbed with the franchise, you know, single entity stuff a lot about how it's sort of all different versions of the same product in different markets. I understand why people feel that way and observe that. But when you look at what the Red Bulls have done, it shows you there is a lot of scope for individual clubs to build a culture, to build a way of doing business. And the USL Championship, I think, just confirms what's been going on at Red Bull New York for quite some time now. They've probably the better part of a decade ago, they looked around and realized that they were sitting on the biggest or the second biggest well of youth talent in the United States. They realized that a few savvy investments in that field could have long-term payoffs, and now we're really seeing it. I mean, the number of Red Bulls players and Red Bulls Academy products who are not just in their system but are working their way through the college system and possibly future pros, it's really substantial. And I think that's what's going to separate clubs like Dallas, LA, Red Bull over the next decade or so. They can really build a dominant position. And I would lump Toronto into that. Their model's a bit different, but I think that's where you get the depth to compete on multiple fronts. That's where you get the ability to sell players and make money that way and build in multiple fashions. So keep an eye out for the Red Bulls. They really are a force to be reckoned with.
To finish on the Eastern Conference, Charles, New York City FC took care of their deal. And for one, at home, they got the bye. What's your thought on their second season as a franchise, as a club in this league, Petr Viera as a coach as well? How impressed are you, if you are impressed?
Yeah, I am. I am. I wrote a piece for USsoccerplayers.com last week about Viera. You know, I love to see... again, in following on some of the stuff about Drogba, I love to see new ideas and new perspectives injected into our North American system here, which can be a little insular, right? And we can be a little even xenophobic sometimes, thinking that our system is unique and our circumstances are unique. Patrick Vieira has brought a mentality, a meticulousness, and a really dogged an admirable dedication to his philosophy of play to New York, and has sort of transformed a team that at this point last year was just a sloppy mess. So, you know, we always have to acknowledge the resources and ambition of the City Football Group. You know, there's a lot of wealth and expertise at the disposal of NYCFC, but that's a tough market. It's a tough situation for that team in a number of ways. And honestly, I'm amazed that this roster, which was really clunky, in the way that it was built throughout last year, you know, it didn't seem like a collection of players that could reach these heights. I thought they might be a playoff team. I never thought they'd do this well.
Let's turn our attention to the West, and we should give some love to the Sports Shield champions, FC Dallas. 60 points on the season, top team, first team in MLS history to finish 60 points back-to-back years. Do they have what it takes to get it done in the second season?
Yeah, it's tough, right? And there is a talk of a curse, the Supporters Shield curse, and not many teams have done the double in that regard. But they have a lot of momentum now. They have two trophies under their belts. They have, I think, a really amazing collective. I was amazed to wake up this morning and see the tweets from the club account that the team bus's first stop after they flew back from LA last night was Mauro Diaz's house, their star playmaker, who's out and whose absence is obviously a huge loss for them. But they woke him up and got him out on crutches, out on his driveway in the middle of the night, and sprayed him with champagne to celebrate the supporter shield. So when you see things like that, you know, it makes it easier for me to believe that they can overcome his absence. I think it's going to be a much uglier attritional style. They played an empty bucket yesterday in a 4-4-2 and kind of ground things out to get the scoreless draw, the result they needed. I think we may see some more of that in the playoffs. They have shown an ability to win in a variety of different ways, but the West is just, it's a meat grinder, and I think it will be again this season. So I think they've got as good a shot as any Shield winner to get that that MLS Cup, but it's a long road ahead.
We might as well just continue going down the table in the West. And the Rapids, of course, are the surprise team of the season. That didn't quite get to the Shield, but no one thought that they'd be anywhere close to it at the start of the year, obviously. There's a lot of questions whether they might not get the wooden spoon at the start of the season. I think a lot of people have speculated on what makes them work. But I guess the question now is whether or not this is a step too far to continue this for a deep run, or whether they can get it done.
Well, that defense is amazing, and I've been filling out my end of year awards ballot this morning, and I'm interested to see, Axel Højbjerg is their leading contender for individual awards, and it's a name that a lot of people around this league still don't know. They're doing what they're doing without any real stars. Jermaine Jones is obviously a big name, but he's been out for most of the year. They have the ability to batten down the hatches and pitch a shutout almost whenever they need to. It was actually shocking to see Houston, not so much that they got the draw, but that they scored at Colorado yesterday. That was a big surprise for me. They definitely have built a team culture there that is working well, that is winning, that's got them on course. And I think any team like that can pitch a shutout when it needs to, and the home field advantage is going to be substantial for them as well. Let's bear in mind they play at a mile high altitude. That's going to be cold weather most likely out there at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. So I think that's a team that nobody wants to play. The question is going to be, can they get the goals when they need them? That's the flip side of this coin is, can Gashi or Doyle or one of those players produce clutch goals when they're needed, and thus far they've gotten to this point by doing it, so I'd hate to bet against them.
Speaking of team nobody wants to play, the Los Angeles Galaxy, third in the Western Conference with the returning Landon Donovan. What's your thought on the Galaxy, Charles? Are they really contenders this year, because it's Galaxy time, the end of the season? Once again, they come in kind of hot, and are they dangerous in the playoffs?
Yeah, weird situation here for the Galaxy, and I think there's more going on under the surface than we know publicly here. There's a lot of questions among the fans about what's up with Robbie Keane. He's been injured for a while now, but there's talk that let's put it this way: before he signed his last contract renewal, he was injured a little bit more than people thought he should have been. So the whispers around the club are that Robbie Keane's future is uncertain, or that he may not be fully have his head on straight. So again, I don't want to cast aspersions. He's been a consummate professional, but with injuries for Gerard, injuries for Keane, the lingering questions about how and whether Keane and Gio Dos Santos can play together in the same 11 and maximize both of those players' abilities. And the fact that this defense really, really has been more porous than we're used to. They got a clean sheet last week, but it was the first one they'd had in months. They scramble well. Yelavan Dama, their first year center back, has done very well, but has had to do a lot of emergency defending. So they don't quite have that same Galaxy shine to them. So I don't know what's going to happen here. I don't rule it out, but it's just not quite the same sense of clarity and purpose and menace to that Galaxy team this year.
The Seattle Sounders FC a few weeks ago looked like a long shot for the playoffs, especially with the Clint Dempsey situation. We know you followed that situation closely. How impressed were you by Nicolas Odero and the fact that he was able to keep that team and having good result, and now having a home playoff game versus Sporting Kansas City in a go home or continue type of situation?
Yeah, it's amazing. I think Lodero has been enormous. I think he already has an argument for being the best player in the league. We had a fun discussion among some MLS soccer editors last week about whether he should be in the mix. He should be eligible for best 11 and MVP honors, given what a small sample size we have of him as a summer transfer window arrival. He's been great. But of course, the return from injury of Roman Torres has been enormous for them in the back. And Brian Schmetzer, honestly, I think, you know, there's still people who question the firing of Siggy Schmidt. But when you look at the turnaround, it's not just about those two guys coming back, you know, getting signed and coming back from injury. Brian Schmetzer brought in a new message, freshened things up in the clubhouse. I think that's crucial. There was just things just had gotten stale under Siggy Schmidt, and there definitely was, if not conflict, maybe certainly unease and maybe a little bit more drama than they needed in the locker room in terms of personalities getting along. And you know, it's amazing what Siggy Schmidt did, and his only coach they've known in the MLS era. Looking back, I mean, for him to even go this long is just a real outlier in this industry. But you have to say they benefited from a different voice at the top. And so I think Schmetzer has probably already legitimately earned the right to have the job on a permanent basis. We'll see what happens in the playoffs. I'm sure they're considering their options carefully. But a great season by the Sounders to kind of rescue things. I know there are those out there who will say this is also a symbol of just how forgiving the MLS format is, and that's certainly true as well.
It is what it is. There's one team we haven't talked about yet, and that is Sporting Kansas City. So we'll end the team conversation before we maybe get a prediction from you and a thought on the MVP race. But Sporting Kansas City, I don't think that they're very happy with how their season went. Can they redeem themselves in the playoffs?
Yeah, it's a tough spot for them. And this format with the knockout round, it really benefits the home team. And so the fact that they have to go on the road, I think, is tough for them. And Seattle have as much momentum as anybody out west at the moment. So I don't think this is the matchup that works for Sporting. And again, I still think they have questions about their formation and the leadership and the mix in terms of the midfield players and the scoring up top. You know, when they won the MLS Cup and they won a couple of U.S. Open Cups in the last few years, there was such a clear identity, such a clear sense of purpose. They played ugly sometimes, they played pretty sometimes, but there was always a guiding set of ideas and a clear understanding of roles, and I don't see that to the same extent this year. So I think I think we may see a little bit of a rethink, not a rebuild, but maybe a rethink of things in KC this winter.
Heading into the playoff this Wednesday, Charles, who is your MLS Cup champion prediction?
Oh man, I should be more prepared for this. yeah, it's tough. I've gone back and forth on this a bit. I'd say my short list is Dallas, Colorado, and New York. I think those teams are the ones that have shown the most consistency over the year, and the most balance, the most versatility. Given that the strength of the West, I'm gonna stick my neck out here, and I think Colorado is gonna do it.
All right, there you go. Let's turn our attention for a final question on the MVP. A lot of people like to debate that. At least this year we have a debate. I don't think there was very much question last year, and he's in the mix again this year. Who would your pick be?
Yeah, so I do want to acknowledge this. Giovinco is right in the mix, and I hope that nobody up north of the border develops too much of a complex if and when he doesn't win. I don't think anybody questions that individually he's right up there as the best player in this league or most talented player. But you know, it's probably not fair to punish him for the injuries and for not producing the same sort of astronomical numbers he did last season. But for me, it's David Villa to come in and do what he's done, to spearhead the transformation of that club, to do the work as well as the glory. You know, Villa's scoring touch, his movements, his finishing instincts, he's still superb even at this advanced stage of his career. You see the quality. And for me, it's also important that you see the motivation, the hunger that he has. His work rate is just it just is mind-boggling to see a player, and we all know the perception of some DPs in this league, right? That stars can kind of ride their laurels a bit. There's been no sign of that at any point from him. He tracks back, he pressures defenders, he presses, he works off the ball. It's just an enormous presence on and off the field. And I have also got to tip my cap to him for learning English practically from scratch, I think, in the off season. So he's really assumed a leadership role and doing all the things you want from your star player off the field as well. So it was a tight race for me between Bradley Wright Phillips and David Villa, but for me, it's the Spaniard.
Real quickly before we say goodbye, I'm curious to get your thoughts on what Coach of the Year is. I think it's got to be Vieira, but I'm not sure whether he'll get the credit he deserves because of the money and the fact that he's from an outside position.
Yeah, Vieira is absolutely on the shortlist for me. You know, what he's done is huge. For me, it was a shortlist of Vieira, Mascherini, and Pareja. And I think Mascherini probably is the form choice right now. I think people look at the Rapids and feel that he's maximized his talent. But I'm giving it to Pareja. FC Dallas's coach gets my vote simply because of the consistency year on year, the heights they've already reached this season. And for me, in a sense, the tiebreaker with Mascherini is the aesthetics. And maybe that's maybe some think that's a spurious factor here. But for me, when I look at what FC Dallas can do when they're on song with their top talent available to them, you know, they can always go and get results the way that Colorado have. But when FC Dallas are in full flow, they are really a sight to behold, and that wins the tiebreak for me.
All right, Charles, you've been generous with your time today. Anything you want to promote before we say goodbye?
Just the usual outlets, and if you don't know where to find me, check me on Twitter at CBOEHM.
All right, enjoy the playoffs. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, gents.
You are listening to Soccer Today, live on SPN Radio. Visit sportspodcastingnetwork.com for more.
And welcome back. Kevin, this is the Canadian Review.
Yeah.
We are going to, I guess we should talk about Vancouver real quickly off the top. And I don't mean to give them short shift, but obviously their season is done now. We will do a full review show of their season soon. They won 4-1. They got a Cascadia Cup. They celebrated that. I understand why they did that. I think that probably the most satisfying thing of the day for most of their fans would have been just the fact that they also eliminated Portland. They were drowning and pulled one in with them, so to speak. So that had
exactly.
To be like,
yeah, you're not going to make the playoff. No, you're coming with us. You're coming with us.
Yeah, and it's a fascinating season for Portland. Very, very strong at home, as they usually are, but not a single win on the road. And, you know, it is a league where you have to have some kind of form on the road to have a chance to be competitive at the end. Yep. But certainly Portland. And look, I think what it tells us, too, is how much luck's sometimes involved in winning MLS Cup. And that's not to take away from their championship last year. They are the champions. They will be forever because they did what's set up how you win a championship. They did it, right? But to think that they were the best team in the league, like talent-wise, was, you know, silly. And it was proven out this year.
Well, interesting comment when I was getting ready for Decision Day yesterday. So watching the 1 hour preview show on MLS Soccer, and when they were talking to the commentary team of the Dallas game, which was with Brad Fiedel on the color, and he was saying that, you know, for a lot of players, Supporter Shield is the actual trophy. Yes, it's the meeting of two philosophies. Which one is more important, the MLS Cup or the Supporter Shield? Of course, for the media, for the hype, for the league, it's the MLS Cup, and that's the team we consider the champion. But for some players that come from Europe, they still believe that after that 34-game season, the Supporter Shield is considered the best team in the league. So there's that aspect to it, too. So it's interesting that, Portland last year were not the best team. They were the best team in the MLS Cup playoff. There's a separation. So it's kind of fitting that this year they didn't get hot like they did last year, and they ended up where maybe they would have last year if they didn't get hot.
Yeah. I mean, those players are wrong. That's you know, I'm going to say it that bluntly. The league is set up as a playoff league. Every team in the league sets themselves up to play as if it is a playoff league. So the Supporter Shield is not a pure competition, like some people like to argue. It simply is not, because you adjust your strategies according to the fact that you're not playing in a single table with no playoffs. And you set your team up in ways that reflect the fact that you're in a playoff league.
Especially yesterday.
I reject that argument that the Supporters' Shield is more important. It simply isn't. Like, name the last five Supporters' Shield winners. Go, quick. I bet you can more chance to name the MLS Cup winners.
Yes, well, even then, but yes.
Yeah, well, I could if I thought about it, but the Supporters' Shield is one that you kind of forget sometimes. But anyway, no, I'm not discounting that it's a valuable trophy like to win, but if Dallas doesn't win in the playoffs, no one's going to remember the Supporters' Shield that fondly.
And let's face
Sicky Schmidt won a Supporters' Shield, but he lost his job because he didn't win an MLS Cup, right?
Yeah, and well, let's face it, for the CBA purposes as well, for the players, it's a great result. Trophy means a bonus, and that's another great news for Dallas players. Two trophies this season. They're on their quest for the treble. Montreal and Toronto focus now, Dwayne. Montreal dropped one on the road with a very young lineup with the debut of David Chouinard as a left attacking midfielder in a type of 4-3-3 formation. And you had as well Anthony Jackson-Amel starting on top and André Lefebvre. So you had three homegrown players from Montreal. So even though it was for squad rotation purposes to get ready for the game midweek, it is always nice to see Dwayne homegrowns playing for the club.
Yeah, for sure. And we're happy to see that. I was a bit surprised by Montreal's approach with the opportunity to perhaps get a home playoff date, which you think would be valuable to them, that they went the approach they did. And then, of course, it turns out that DC United loses their game as well. So the Impact could have captured that home date. So do you think that was the right way to go, to rest and to focus on what is going to be Thursday now, we know? So
I guess we'll know Thursday. Thursday will be the answer to that question because you saved, but then you used Piatti and Adro. So Adro, I would have to be fine because you don't necessarily need to start him on Thursday, depending on the rest of the roster. But you do have as well Piatti for 30-something minute that he played on Sunday. So you did use a little bit of Piatti. We'll see how they respond on Thursday, and that's a question. So Mancosu wasn't used, so you'll have Mancosu on top on Thursday. I would be really surprised if they start Drogba. I would put money on Mancosu to start for the team for the rest of their journey this year. Will it be a one-off? Will it be a home and away after that? By the way, at the hypothetical playoff, actually, tickets have been starting to be sold this morning. So if you want to put your money where your mouth is and you believe the Impact will win against DC United on the road Thursday, get your tickets for the first leg of that potential Eastern Conference semifinal game,
which would be Sunday. I word on the attendance for this week. If you're new and you turn on, you're going to be shocked to see the amount of empty seats there are. It is very difficult to turn tickets over in 3 days for playoff games.
Yes, especially for me. Yeah, because when you talk about usually it takes months to sell out big games. It takes month of work to season tickets and to sell big games. When you have just a few days or a few weeks to do that, for a team like Toronto and Montreal who's been clinched for the last few weeks, yes, there's been more time. But for a team that are on the cusp, they have a short period of time that they actually sell tickets.
Yeah, I anticipate that Toronto will draw more than 20,000 to their game, but, you know, that stadium sits 30, so there's going to be empty seats in BMO Field, and, you know, some people are going to look at that as, oh, see, no one cares in Toronto. That's just not the case. I mean, there's a lot of people that enjoy going to TFC games that don't necessarily aren't as engaged as we'd like to think. But anyway, we'll see what the attendance says. Back to the Impact, though. You mentioned that there's a lot of younger players that played out there. Any of them impress you, Kevin?
Yeah, no, they're, you know, I've been surprised by Orlando, but it was nothing really special for them because they didn't have any meaning outside of just trying to be the monkey in the wrench. I was surprised that all teams in the Eastern Conference didn't win, like a Philly dropping the game, Montreal and DC United. It's just, well, I shouldn't be surprised because it's just like the last month and a half where when Deem had opportunity to seal, to lock it, they always didn't do it because it seems like nobody wanted to make the playoff in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I would say that of the results that happened, obviously New York City FC with a big result, they got the three late goals. You could actually tell at the TFC game because TFC was up 3-1 when Columbus tied that game. So at that point, Toronto was going to be second. So you could sort of tell that a lot of people in the crowd that were aware were looking at their phones a lot more. And when it came through that New York scored the two quick ones to make it 3-1 themselves, you could see, you know, that the information got to the bench and that you could see the players just kind of relax and drop down and just start to, to not maybe play with the same intensity that they did for a while. That's kind of the what happens when you're having these games. Because at that point, that game went from being meaningful to meaningless, right? Like in a snap of the finger, really.
It's interesting you say that, because during the Montreal game as well, during the broadcast, before halftime, Mauro Biel was talking to Nicky Martineau from the TVA Sports, the broadcasting of the broadcasting partner of the Montreal Impact for now. And they were talking about, you know, Mauro, how do you approach this game concerning with DC United playing right now as well? He's like, well, we're aware of the score. We're aware of the situation. We are monitoring the situation in Orlando with the DC game, and we are going to play our game accordingly. So maybe the decision to play Piatti and not Giroux later in that game was due to the result in what's going on in Orlando. So they'll have a favorable result if they would get a draw or a win. So they needed a win, and they didn't get it. But it's interesting, too, that it's when they introduced Arturo and Piatti that then the floodgates open and they let two in. So, yeah, because at that point it was 1-0. So it was still a potential where if you bring in good players, you can have a shot at it. But by the way, Chouinard had probably the best chance of the match with the Montreal Impact. A great shot, and he thought he had scored, and a great save by the New England backup goalkeeper. So, no, it was interesting.
Yeah. I think Toronto dodged a bullet with New England not quite having that goal differential, because if you look at the form chart versus New England versus Philadelphia, they're night and day. New England has been amongst the hotter teams in the East over the past month and a half or so, but they're on the outside looking in because of that earlier hole that they had dug for themselves. And of course, Kamara also kills Toronto. So that as well. Let's turn our attention to your
thoughts.
He
kills Montreal usually too, Dwayne. He scored half his goal this season against Montreal.
There you go. Let's turn our attention to real quick. We're going to obviously do an intense preview of both of these games, but we may as well touch on them right now quickly before we move on to Toronto. Your thoughts on Thursday? Do you feel confident heading into that one, Kevin? Or
Montreal has been quite successful on the road this season, having a great points per game average, and look great on the road. Doesn't seem to have a complex of how they play, how they approach game. Seem to be fine with the counter and with players like Mancosu now, which is similar to what Marco De Valle was type of playing. Still not the same type of, but he's a hybrid that he can still hold up the ball, not like Drogba can, but he can still create more space for Piatti in the way that he creates run, sucks in one or two defenders, gives a little bit more space for Piatti. Piatti cuts from the left foot to the right foot, curls it back post. It's 1-0. We've seen that happen countless times this season, and Mancosu creates that opportunity for that. So the fact that you have Mancosu starting on the road Thursday with Piatti, hopefully in a great form, something to prove. It's going to be interesting to see what happens on Thursday. Yes, it's a short week, and then you're looking at a situation that you're going to play the other Sunday, so it's three games in not even 8 days. So it's a factor of, yes, fatigue. We'll see how rested Piatti and how fast he can recover, because Piatti is the key for Montreal. Because if Piatti can create the space necessary, or is so impressive that the team puts 2-3 defenders on him, well, guess what? Mancosu will have the space. Donadel will find Mancosu instead, and boom, they could score an early goal on the road and then dictate what's happening in that game. I think that's the key for Montreal.
Yeah. Toronto, let's move to Toronto now. Obviously, the 3-2 win over Chicago. It's a game that's hard to sort of completely digest. Now, obviously, the win was important for Toronto because it had been a while since they had got the full 3 points in a game. A lot of that came with Javinko's injury, obviously. However, they still, I believe, it was very important for Toronto, even taking positioning in the standings out of the mix to get that win to go into the playoffs, at least feeling a little more confident about themselves. But that said, you know, allowing the two goals. Now, the first goal was a goalkeeping error. It went straight through Irwin, and it wasn't really his best moment of the season, for sure. The second goal, as I said a minute ago, I think you can kind of see how they relaxed knowing what the score was in New York. They did manage to lock it down after that. That said, you know, they scored the three goals, and I think the most important aspect of that game, for if you're a Toronto fan, was Javinko's play. That was the Javinko that won the MVP last year was out there. There was some pieces of skill that he had on the ball yesterday that literally made the crowd gasp. He did something on that second goal. If you haven't had a chance to watch TFC's second goal yet yesterday, he didn't score. He headed the ball in. But the piece of footwork that he does on the touchline, it was right in front of me. So I have had a good view of it. just incredible. It was something you just don't see in Major League Soccer. There was another play where the ball was, it was a clearance that was well in the air, probably about 50 feet in the air, and Giamaico just on one touch trapped it on his foot and turned at the same time from a 50-foot ball dropping from the sky. It was just incredible stuff to watch, and he certainly was tied in. He was geared in. He's clearly up for it right now, and you know, he is their wild card as we head into this playoff period, and you can't deny that. And that's not to say you can't beat them, and you know that very well what Philly's going to do is they're going to hack them. They're going to go at them, and they're going to try and distract them because Giamaico can get distracted, and it's going to be a challenge for him to fight through that. But getting three goals, and Toronto FC earlier in the season did struggle a little bit to score goals. They managed to get their to get it over 50 goals in the season. So that is a turnaround there that makes it a little more favorable heading into the playoffs. But in terms of yesterday, as I said, I think that Giovinco's play, where he clearly was geared in and clearly is not feeling the effects of that injury anymore, was what you take away from that if you're a TFC fan. And now you just basically hold your breath till Wednesday. I do believe, Kevin, that Toronto FC in a home and away series can potentially beat anyone in the East. I also believe that anyone in the East can win a one-off, even a team on terrible form. And it would be so TFC to give Philadelphia its first win in 2 months and be eliminated 3 days after the season ended.
Yeah.
That's so TFC. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit about the Michael Bradley, Tasty Milan rumor.
You're listening to Soccer Today on SBN Radio. You can find the on-demand version of this very show on iTunes, Stitcher, Feedburner, Podbay Player, Podbean, anywhere you get your podcasts under the Sports Podcasting Network feed. Subscribe to our YouTube page to make sure you never miss a live show talking about Soccer Today, the MLS post-game show, Open Lines After Dark, Five Rings Daily during the Olympics. Make sure you subscribe and give us a follow on Twitter at SportsPodNet and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/SportsPodcastingNetwork.
Welcome back. Well, Kevin and I will end the show with a little bit of a, we'll give our predictions for the knockout stage and maybe an MLS Cup. I'm letting you know, Kevin, now. So get your MLS Cup pick in your head. You want to stick with Sporting Kansas City? That's your choice?
We'll see.
Well, yeah, think about it over the next few minutes here. But let's talk about a rumor that I started, basically. So I was reporting something, which is getting a lot of attention now, particularly in the United States amongst the Americans abroad kind of crowd. And that is simply this, is that AC Milan has been sniffing around Michael Bradley. And for those that, to give a little more detail, a little more context to what this is, what I was told this past week by several people very close to the club, that is that AC Milan was actually at Kia training ground last week. So they were invited in to watch Bradley train. So that's at a point in this kind of courtship that is much further along than I think people might realize. Now, well, that doesn't mean it's going. Sorry, Kevin, go ahead.
My question is TFC trying to, I'm not going to say get rid of Michael Bradley, but are they trying to get rid of Michael Bradley?
I think that Toronto FC is more than willing to listen to offers about Michael Bradley. Let's put it that way. And it's an interesting dilemma that they face here because Michael Bradley is a talented player. There is no doubt about that. He is a player that they market around a great deal. He's a player that that I think has provided value to Toronto FC. There's absolutely zero doubt about that. But what the question is whether Michael Bradley is a player who fits in Major League Soccer as a DP, because he is not a player that necessarily brings the same level of direct goal scoring impact into a game that most DPs do. He is very similar in terms of his play and where he came from and what he's kind of role he plays. I mean, they're not the exact same player, but what kind of role he plays as Julian de Guzman was for Toronto FC. And we all know how poorly that turned out for him. It turned out fine for Julian. He made a lot of money. But what I mean is for the sort of the fit, it didn't work here, right? Now, Bradley, I think, is a slightly more talented player than Julian was, but nonetheless, the same kind of debate goes on when you're talking about Michael Bradley at TFC. Does he give them the value that they need for a $400,000 cap hit? And I think increasingly Toronto FC is realizing that maybe they can spend that $400,000 on the cap and that DP slot in a more effective way. And that would be, bluntly, to use a direct example from another Canadian team, is they want to find their own Piatti.
Yeah.
So,
you want your star attacking midfielder to play a little higher, and yeah, you want a closer to Piatti than a Bradley, which maybe plays a little too deep, and that's been a criticism that he's been faced. But when you have a Giovinco in front of you, then you have an Altidore, you kind of have to play deep. So yeah, it's a conundrum, and maybe the answer to that conundrum is to get a Piatti instead of a Bradley, quote unquote, for TFC.
Yeah, and I use Piatti purposely, both on stylistically. Well, he's obviously, we take Piatti in a heartbeat. Do you want to trade him? I don't know.
Because he's more of a, he likes to draft to the left of the midfield, even when he's not in that position in the 11. And it would kind of fit to how Toronto plays with a Giovinco that's more centric, Altidore centric up top. You add that type of creativity to the left side. So a Piatti like, because, yeah, no, Piatti's going to stay in Montreal. But a quote-unquote Piatti for TFC might be the answer to create a little more of that space up front.
Yeah, and what I've also been told is that they are sniffing around South America to find the DP. So they're looking for the same place that a lot of people look for those attacking midfielders. And the reason for that is pragmatic, is that they're more likely to come, and they're more likely to come at a wage that's reasonable. You know, they're going to be DPs, but even MLSE has a sort of upper limit on how much they're going to spend on a guy like that. Like, you bring in a guy coming from a European league to play as an attacking midfielder, and you're looking at probably a $10 million contract, and I'm not sure whether even TFC is willing to do that. So they are looking to go down into South America and find a guy that will fit into that. I think that there was some rumors earlier this year that Giovinco might be sold as well. That terrifies TFC fans. I mean, there's going to come a day where he's no longer going to be out there, and I think that probably will be in 2 years, not 1 year, though. So you want to really take advantage of the fact that you probably have one more year left with this guy that is incredible. He's probably the most talented player to ever play offensively in this league. If you could put a 10, an effective 10 that can really take the attention away from him, I think that opens things wide open for that team. Both on Giovinco and also on Josie, who is kind of plays a different game, but it will, you know, he'll be left wide open because you're going to have to be deal with two guys that are creative, right? And you're leaving Josie, who's a great finisher, who's a great poacher.
Yeah, or he can hold the ball too, and he can hold the ball to create that space for the winger or Giovinco.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a TFC fan, even if you, I don't know, they're coming for me out there. If you heard that horn,
are you close to the marina? Is that a boat or something? Are you in a boat?
That was a bit odd. I'm not sure what that was.
That's Squizzato's gimmick. That's gimmick infringement. That's Squizzato's gimmick to be on a boat.
There you go. Even if you're a TFC fan that loves Bradley, and there are a lot of them out there, you got to be a little bit excited by the idea of, and again, let's just use Piatti as the example here. If you can find a guy at that same level and put him into TFC's lineup, I think that's got to excite you. That's a dangerous offensive team, especially if they can keep the shape that they have this year and continue to grow at the back. Maybe add a little bit more depth back there. You're going to have to replace. Will Johnson can kind of slot into more of a defensive midfield role. Hell, maybe Shrew might have another year in him. Who knows? I think you can kind of cover for Bradley that way if you maybe add a little bit more depth back there in a similar role. That's got to excite you as a TFC fan. It's got to scare you if you're not a TFC fan, the idea of them having that kind of talent. It's a player that they haven't really had since maybe Amado Guevara, and I'm not sure even he's quite at that level, right?
Yeah.
And that's going way back if you don't remember him, guys. But let's end the show, Kevin, with actually, you know what? Briefly, because it's getting out all over the place, Kevin, let's put the CBC TSN stuff out there.
Yeah.
I was told this weekend, and we're chasing this to confirm this on multiple levels right now, folks. As you saw, I tweeted out a trademark application that was put forth by the CBC called for Soccer Night in Canada. And our initial thoughts on that, Kevin, were that meant that the Canadian Premier League might be talking to the CBC to broadcast there. Since that has come out, it is becoming increasingly more clear that that's actually related to Major League Soccer. And I was told by an employee at TSN that that TSN has lost the rights to Major League Soccer in Canada, and it will be on CBC next year. We're trying to confirm that a little bit further.
Which means, because right now the situation with every single Major League Soccer team in Canada, right now they have an official partner league-wide, which is TSN for national games. Then in local markets, like in Montreal with TVA Sports, they have the official Montreal Impact broadcaster of TVA Sports. And for next year, what that could probably mean is some of the games, like the national ones, like the weekend ones, the Saturday night ones nationally, might be on CBC. And your other games be sold to the highest bidder, probably TVA Sports, or maybe TSN for that matter, but the national contract seems to be now for CBC.
Yeah, we're still working on absolute confirmation on that, but if you go to the CBC's website right now, and this is why I chose to put it out there, I was going to wait till tomorrow, because Jonathan Tannenwald's on tomorrow, and we're going to talk about it here, because he's a TV expert, and he'll have some more information to probably provide it, but if you go to their website, you'll find a banner on there that's saying Soccer Night in Canada. So it seems like this is pretty far along. There's a lot of questions about this. We're not sure how CBC is affording it because they claimed that they were leaving the professional sports game a few years ago.
But who knows? Does that mean the end of Hockey Night in Canada on CBC? Which would be possible, because if Sportsnet wants to monetize the big contract they do have for hockey, they have to streamline the viewership to them so that they only have that revenue of ads. They don't have to necessarily share it for CBC when CBC broadcasts the Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday. So that might be a ramification of that for potentially Soccer Night in Canada. So that's what it all means.
Yeah, I believe it could be a good thing for soccer fans, because everyone gets CBC in this country. So you wouldn't, you know, it'd be easier to find for the few people out there that are still resisting cable. There's a lot of people out there resisting cable, so it'd be easier to find for people. I also think that because CBC's mandate is to be a little bit more all-encompassing, that you might see more coverage of the game as a whole in the country, like, so you might get more mentions of stuff that's happening at the grassroots. I could see them tying it into like a show that's a little more folksy, for lack of a better way to put it, where they're talking to local soccer people to promote things that are happening at the grassroots, kind of like they do with their Hockey Day in Canada stuff that they do out there, if you're familiar with that. I could see them doing that as part of their mandate, because they're required to do stuff like that. So it might actually benefit it. And Nigel Reed would probably be the voice, and I like Nigel, so that would be good as well. We're going to continue to follow that as well. But Kevin, let's get to the, you know, everyone likes to see us make fools of himself. So hashtag save this tweet. I know it's not a tweet, but let's get our predictions out there, Kevin. And we'll start with the two knockout games. And we'll start with the West, because that will give us time to think about how we want to talk about Montreal and Toronto. So the LA RSL game, thoughts?
Well, before we had Charles on, I thought that everything was getting rosier in LA. Apparently not. We'll see how that unfolds in a one-off, but it's a home game for LA against a kind of reeling RSL. Can LA get the home win? They're the favorite. It's very possible. I'll go with LA in that one.
Yeah, this is not your daddy's RSL. This is kind of a team that right now is on terrible form. And is, as I said, it's still a team that's rethinking, rebuilding itself from the Christ years. I think they're a little bit kind of middling at the moment. I can't see RSL taking the Galaxy down at StubHub. So I will as well pick the Galaxy to win that one somewhat convincingly. Let's call it 2-0. Seattle SKC. Here's the nuts and bolts, Kevin. Are you going to stick with that ship, or are you going to go down with it in the sinking waters?
Seattle's kind of on form in that matchup right now. I will have to go with Seattle. Nicholas Lodero is quite impressive in the way he carries this team forward. I have to pick the informed team. So unfortunately, my beginning of the season pick is gone down. I admit it. I was wrong, but now I got a chance to be right once more. But Seattle will beat SKC, in my opinion, on Thursday.
If it was reversed in terms of the home away, I'd be inclined to say Kansas could take Seattle out. I'm not completely convinced by Seattle's turnaround. I do believe that obviously that they have played better, and I think that they will be a playoff team again next year. But I do also think that this is a bit of a rebuilding season again, a bit of rethinking season. There's not really rebuilding in MLS, rethinking season for Seattle, and they're going to. I don't believe they're, even though their form suggests it, I don't believe they're amongst the favorites to get out of the West, but I'm going to call this one to penalties. This is going to be the epic penalty shootout. You can flip a coin from that point. So just for you know what's and giggles, I'll pick Kansas City to win in a shootout in that one after a tense 1-1. All right, let's move to the East now. We're going to have to get to it now. We'll start with yours, Kevin. Impact, DC.
Tough game. If Montreal gets the early goal, maybe. But DC United is quite on form over the last month and a half, especially over the last six games, 4-1-1. I believe DC United are the favorite, and unfortunately for Montreal, will be the end of the road. Will we see Drogba play again for Montreal Impact? We'll get the answer on Thursday, if because it might be the last game of the season for the Montreal Impact. 1-0 DC seems to be the case. Billy Mead standing on his head because he had the day off on Sunday, so he's fresh for the last game. And Montreal Impact, over the last year and a half when they played DC United, they haven't lost since August 2015 against them, but it's been 1-1, 1-1, and 2-1. In all three games, Montreal had many, many chances, point-blank shots on goal, clear-cut goal opportunity robbed by Bill Hamid. Will that happen this Thursday? There's a very, very high probability, and that's why a 1-0-2-1 is my prediction, unfortunately, for DC United.
Look, I'm inclined to agree that the Impact don't look likely. However, the Impact all do have the higher star power. And I tend to sometimes think when you have high star power that you can get results. You can get results in the playoffs especially. And I tend to pick the teams with the better stars in one-off playoff games. So I think that what this game is going to be, not to play the fence too much, is it's either going to be a dominating DC United win. Like, I could see the Impact losing like 3-0. But, or the Impact are going to squeak it out on a late goal, and Drogba is going to be dramatically coming out of the woods to, redemption or whatever.
I had her on a corner, like the unlikeliest goal, like Champions League 2012 type of stuff. And then Montreal moves on. Maybe, I did say last week that maybe Drogba does have some magic left in him for the Montreal Impact. That would qualify as magic.
All right, so I'll pick the Impact just to be contrarian. Let's move to Toronto, Philly. Yeah. I'll get your thoughts first, Kevin.
Toronto will win against Philly. Philly has been riding a wave that they started early on this season. It hasn't been quite the same. And they have been a high turnover of player during the season. Player like Vincent Nogueira, Sebastien Letou moved on. So now you have this team with Chris Pontius heading into Toronto to try to get a result on the road, which hasn't been easy for them lately. It's not going to be necessarily an easy game for Toronto, but I do see a moment where Jovinko Altidore finish a great set piece, Kapoutra goal for Altidore. So yeah, 1-2-0 could be very probable. I see TFC moving on to the semifinal of the Eastern Conference.
What Charles said is true, that the defense lately has looked a little shaky, and that's concerning, but Philly's pretty bad right now. They're the worst team in the playoffs. So I do think Toronto's going to win this, but I do think Philly's going to score a goal, and it might even be the first goal, because, you know, I could see the yips in there, and it just seems very Toronto FC that they might go down early. But I will pick Toronto to win. I'll call it 3-1. I'll call that game. So that's quickly before we say goodbye in the day. We're a bit over now. Is just give our overall picks. What's the MLS Cup final going to be, and who's going to be standing in the confetti, Kevin?
Oh, so that's a tough one. Between the two New Yorks, because then we're talking about TFC versus one of the New Yorks and Montreal versus the other New Yorks, if you're following your picks, and maybe meet DC for me in New York. I do see the Red Bulls being the champion of the East because of the team aspect, because of Bradley Wright Phillips, the Golden Boot winner, what he can produce in a home and away series. And it's a tough place to play at Red Bull Arena. And depending on which side it is on the Western Conference, I do feel Dallas will be the Eastern Conference. So we will have the finals in Dallas. But that will be interesting to see how New York and Dallas, two best teams in the league, in my opinion. I do go chalk here, but I do feel that though that will be the MLS Cup final. And New York Red Bulls will spoil the party of the I'm of the Supporters Shield winner by winning this year MLS Cup.
I Okay, I never goes chalk. This will probably be the year it goes chalk after I say it never goes chalk. But I am going to fine. I'll just say it. I believe in star power. The best player in the league is in Toronto. I think Toronto's going to win the East. I think the Galaxy are going to get out of the West, and it'll be Toronto FC and the LA Galaxy at BMO Field in December. And this is Toronto, so our hearts will be ripped out of our chest when Landon Donovan scores in the 93rd minute to win 1-0. It'll be really tragic, and then we'll all just burn BMO Field down.
Yeah. By 1 point, Toronto FC has more points in the regular season than LA. So if it is the MLS Cup final, it will be at BMO Field. Interesting prediction. So you've picked LA in Toronto. That's so TFC.
Yes, there you go. All right. On that note, Kevin, let's say goodbye before anyone realizes that I just picked Toronto FC to make the MLS Cup final.
Tomorrow, 11 a.m., a very important show. We will talk about more about what we just talked about, CBC Soccer Night in Canada, MLS rights nationally in Canada won't be, probably, allegedly, on TSN next year. So more on that story tomorrow with Jonathan Tannenwald. And until then, have a great soccer. You were listening to SPN, the Sports Podcasting Network. Visit us, sportspodcastingnetwork.com.